Penguin Random House Audio presents The World According to Garp, 40th Anniversary Edition, by John Irving. Read for you by MacLeod Andrews, with an introduction read by the author.
For Colin and Brendan. The World According to Garp, an introduction. 40 years ago. 20 years ago, which was 20 years after The World According to Garp was published, I wrote an afterword to the novel. Rewriting is the unglamorous part of creating, but revision is essential for clarity. In rewriting this new introduction to Garp, of course I found things to cut or change in that 1998 afterword. And I found a lot of necessary things to add. In retrospect, it's unnecessary to say that Garp is a worst-case scenario, or that I am a doomsayer novelist. But in 1972 to 1975, when I was teaching at the Writers' Workshop in Iowa City, where I began writing Garp, I was worried that the subject of sexual hatred, of intolerance of sexual minorities and sexual differences, would be outdated before I finished the novel. In 1976 to 1977, when I was living in Massachusetts and Vermont, where I finished Garp, it was inconceivable to me that the sexual violence I was writing about would long endure. In short, I thought sexual discrimination was too backward and too stupid to last. In 1978, when Garp was published, I thought I'd written a period piece. Garp is an angry and a comic novel, a feminist novel, and an ode to the women's movement, which is at once exalted and satirized, but above all, I thought, Garp is a period piece. I was wrong. The World According to Garp isn't prescient, but sexual hatred hasn't gone away. It's not good news that Garp is still relevant. We should be ashamed that sexual intolerance is still tolerated, but it is. My eldest child, Colin, who is now 53, was 12 when he first read Garp in manuscript and with me awaiting his reaction. There are scenes that are unsuitable for 12-year-olds. Although Garp was my fourth novel, it was the first one Colin could read. I remember feeling proud but nervous at the prospect of being judged by one of my children. That the book was dedicated to Colin and to his younger brother Brendan made the moment more tense. Everyone knows the two most common questions that are asked of any novelist. What is your book about, and is it autobiographical? These questions and their answers have never been of compelling interest to me. If it's a good novel, the questions and the answers are irrelevant. Yet while my 12-year-old son was reading Garp, I anticipated that these were the questions he would ask me, and I thought very hard about how I might answer him. Now, 40 years later, having written 14 novels, it is obvious to me that I have never thought as hard about my answers to those irrelevant questions as I did when Colin was reading Garp. While Colin kept reading, I agonized over what the novel was about. To my horror, and full of self-loathing, I jumped to the conclusion that the book was about the temptations of lust. Lust leads just about everyone to a miserable end. There's a chapter called More Lust, as if there weren't enough already. I was ashamed of how much lust was in the book, not to mention how punitive a novel I thought it was. Every character in the story who indulges his or her lust is severely punished. Among the culprits and the victims, mutilations abound. K. characters lose eyes and arms and tongues, even penises. It had seemed at the time, when I was beginning the novel, that the polarization of the sexes was a dominant theme. The story was about men and women growing farther apart. Look at the plot. A remarkable, albeit outspoken woman, Garp's mother, Jenny Fields, is killed by a lunatic male who hates women. Garp himself is assassinated by a lunatic female who hates men. Garp is a sexual assassination story. In this dirty-minded world, Jenny thinks, you are either somebody's wife or somebody's whore, or fast on your way to becoming one or the other. If you don't fit either category, then everyone tries to make you think there is something wrong with you. But there is nothing wrong with Garp's mother. In her autobiography, Jenny writes, I wanted a job and I wanted to live alone. That made me a sexual suspect. Then I wanted a baby, but I didn't want to have to share my body or my life to have one. That made me a sexual suspect, too. Being what she calls a sexual suspect who becomes a feminist icon makes Jenny a target of misogynists, just as Garp, her son, becomes a target of radical feminists. The principal point about Garp's mother is stated in the first chapter. Jenny Fields discovered that you got more respect from shocking other people than you got from trying to live your own life with a little privacy. Today, 40 years later, Jenny's discovery seems more credible, not to mention more defensible, than it was in 1978. There was a time when Jenny threatened to take over the novel, when I wasn't at all sure if Garp or his mother was the main character. Something of my indecision remains. When I wrote Garp, I was more on his side than on Jenny's, as a writer. Garp resents being a literary but unknown fiction writer, at a time when his mother is famous for her feminist autobiography. At the time I was writing Garp, I was a literary but unknown novelist. Even though Jenny was my fictional creation, a part of me surely resented her success too. The World According to Garp was my first bestseller. In hardcover, it sold fewer than 1 million copies, but Garp sold 6 million paperbacks in English, and it was the first of my novels to be translated. Of the utmost importance to me, it is the novel that allowed me to become a full-time writer. Over time, I began to like Jenny more, and I found I liked Garp a little less. To put it simply, Garp is petulant about his mom's success, yet she does more for the world than he does. Over time, my sexual politics have aligned with Jenny's. The World According to Garp was always a feminist novel, but in the passage of time, I've become more of a feminist. Why? Because the inequalities and discrimination women faced in the start-up days of the women's movement haven't gone away. Because the anti-abortion zealots, their subjecting of women to childbirth by denying them a choice about abortion, and the ongoing second-class treatment of women by the Roman Catholic Church and the so-called pro-life proponents haven't gone away. That's why. Garp is a political novel, and the politics of sexual intolerance and suppression haven't gone away. Roberta Muldoon, the transgender woman who was a former tight end for the Philadelphia Eagles, is a hero in this novel, and for 40 years and counting, a personal hero of mine. Roberta is a mediator between Garp and Jenny, and the only character in the novel who loves Garp and his mother equally. Roberta is a model of stability in a novel about instability. In 40 years, I've gotten over.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?